Welcome to Rabble Docs. I'm Megan Perry. Canada prides itself on its vast wilderness and abundant resources. But in many jurisdictions, the desire to appear business-friendly conflicts with conservation. Manitoba is no exception. A peat mining company holds a lease in its Hecla Grindstone Provincial Park, and that company wants to start mining. The Manitoba chapter of the Wilderness Committee is dead set against the development, and the Manitoba government is stuck in the middle. In late January, Leif Larson joined Eric Rader of the Manitoba chapter of the Wilderness Committee on a trip to the proposed mine site. He wanted to see for himself what was at stake. Here's Leif Larson's documentary. It's called For Pete's Sake.
Yeah, okay, so I would like to figure out where that tiny little lake is. God, this is a horrible road right now.
Eric Rader is the campaign director for the Wilderness Committee of Manitoba.
We have tracks in the ditch right here. I see tracks that might actually be from either a deer or a coyote, I guess. Moose tracks is what we would really like to see, though.
In late January, Rader and I drove out to Manitoba's Hecla Grindstone Provincial Park, about 2 hours north of Winnipeg. We were intent on seeing, firsthand, the land which has been licensed to a private company for a peat mining operation.
So we're out on the Washoe Fisher Peninsula, actually the Grindstone Peninsula. We're really close to one of the biggest moose populations left in southern Manitoba. But with the continued push for these peat mines, 45 square kilometers of this area is going to be strip mined.
Rader prefers to use the term strip mine when talking about peat mining, to give his audience an impression of what will be done to the land through the mining process. According to Rader, the peat will be removed from the ground, along with the trees and shrubs currently growing out of it. In addition to the fact that Rader and the Wilderness Committee oppose any resource development in provincial parks, he is especially concerned about this mining operation and what it will do to local moose populations.
That's moose habitat lost for the next 40 to 70 years. And that could easily shut down the last healthy moose population in southern Manitoba.
After driving several kilometers into the park, Rader's GPS tells him that we're just east of a little lake. A pond, really, that is close to the boundary of the proposed peat mining operation. While Winnipeg is practically green as we make our January drive, there are several inches of fresh snow here. A quick trip into the woods on the side of the road tells us that the terrain is far too uneven for snowshoes or skis. We decide to go in on foot. After walking only 30 or 40 meters from the road, we find ourselves on the edge of the peat bog, and the going gets tough. There are gnarled roots everywhere, and with each step we sink in, almost up to our knees, in the snow and moss. More than once we step into a hole and sink up to our waists, or fall face first into the snow. It's not long before Rader finds some evidence of moose. Chewed branches.
They're like this, but it has to have deciduous trees because that's what they really want to eat. And they don't want to move. You'll find bulls that are not going to go more than 400 or 500 yards from that same spot for months as they get their energy back. That's if we find into a winter yard is what you would call it. Cross our fingers.
Eventually we reach the pond. The first thing we notice is on the opposite shore. An arrow straight cut line as far as the eye can see. On the drive up, Rader explained how destructive cut lines can be.
We have industrial activity, mineral exploration, logging roads, that sort of thing. We have these paths bulldozed into the moose habitat. Moose cross them and don't need to use them because they have very long legs and they like walking through deep snow and swampy areas.
Rader went on to say that it's not the moose that use the cut lines. It's the predators.
You'll find wolves following trails for kilometer after kilometer looking for a moose track. And so it changes the predator-prey relationship pretty badly when we start putting linear disturbances, packed trails, into moose habitat.
We cross the pond and continue down the cut line for several hundred meters. The farther we go into the bog, the smaller the trees get, until we are entirely surrounded by stunted, shrub-like evergreens. They look like saplings, really. Curious, I ask Raider how old he thinks the trees around us are. The answer surprised me.
I can't say for sure, really. I am curious, but you're talking about, you know, you're not talking about more than an inch or 2 inches of growth a year. So these ones that are, you know, that's got to be a 14-foot tree. That's got to be an old tree already. But it's just the lack of nutrients, the hard life that's causing this to be such spindly little sticks.
With its uneven terrain, stunted trees, and Labrador tea bushes, it's hard to call the bog pretty. And frankly, I can't see why anyone would hike out here for the scenery alone. The peat bog has hidden value.
The peat must be so thick in this area because we only have very marginal tree growth. They don't have enough soil and purchase and nutrients sitting here for them to make use of. And this would be an indication that the peat bog is the thickest. And this is exactly what the commercial interests are looking for. But also one of the areas of the highest concentration of carbon. The calculation that this peatland we're standing in, this mine site, would be sequestering roughly 200 tons equivalent of carbon annually.
Even the most conservative estimates say that mining will release thousands of tons of carbon annually, contributing to global warming. While the industry has been quoted as saying that they can bring the ecosystem back within a human lifetime, Raider doubts this claim.
That's a complete fallacy, actually. In several of these recent peat licenses, the companies have said that they can't restore this bog.
Raider says that even if they can restore the bog, so much carbon will be released in the process that it could take up to 1,500 years for it to be reabsorbed. There might also be consequences for fragile Lake Winnipeg.
What we have here when they start mining is that they'll be chopping up the decaying sphagnum moss, the peat, and we're worried about sedimentation. It's not necessarily nutrients, but more sedimentation entering the lake.
Since the company already owns the lease, says Raider, Manitoba will likely have to compensate the leaseholders. It's the same thing the province did with logging licenses in provincial parks in 2008. While this would be an expensive proposition and a difficult sell while the province is running a deficit, Raider says that the alternative would cost much more.
The money that it'll cost us if we don't buy these back in terms of the long-term ecological ramifications, the health benefits, the problems with extreme weather events because of the carbon that we'll be releasing over the next 50 years, I mean, that's going to be the real cost. So we need action and money now to stop these.
After spending the morning traipsing around the bog, we turned around to leave, stopping to build a fire and cook our lunch on the frozen pond. Raider went to extremes to make sure that we didn't build our fire on peat, and at the time I thought he was being overly cautious. But I'm reminded about how fragile this ecosystem is as we drive out of the park. Right by the side of the road is an area about the size of an average backyard. It smolders.
Right over there we actually have flames. So this is all inside the provincial park. And this is the risk. Something like this happening is a risk just from not using the park properly, like even just from campers. But once you expose the amount of peat that gets exposed in peat mining, the risks are that much greater.
Smoke rises out of the ground, and there are burned trees everywhere. Flames jump up in some areas, but mostly the ground is just covered in ash and fallen branches.
Every night it's been going down to freezing for 3 months. And, you know, minus 20 temperatures, and you'd think this would be enough to freeze off, but there's a peat fire.
Raider says that peat fires burn slowly, persistently. Nevertheless, it's hard to believe that a fire is burning inside a provincial park and no one is around. There are no fire trucks, no water bombers, just an area that looks like it's been partially bulldozed.
Wow, this is sad. I mean, this is, and it's tough to figure out what you'd actually do to, you know, to put this fire out. If they knew what they should do to put this fire out, they'd obviously be working on it, but there's so many different little hot spots from this that are burning.
A call to Manitoba Conservation reveals that the province does know about this fire, apparently started by some people who stopped to cook their lunch, people who were less cautious than Raider. I can hardly blame them. Were it not for Raider's persistent warnings, I might have built our fire on the peat as well. It's just so counterintuitive that this moist, spongy moss could burn. According to Raider, this fire perfectly demonstrates his point about peat sequestering carbon, and why we need to think twice before we allow it to be mined.
I mean, this shows the fact that that peat is so carbon rich. It burns so easily. They're using it as a biofuel in some areas, but this is not a sustainable, renewable resource. Something that takes, you know, hundreds of years or 1,000 years to produce. And something that we haven't even figured out how to restore in any sort of quantity.
After walking around the fire for a few minutes, taking pictures and marveling at the glacial pace at which it was burning, we get back into the truck. On the drive back to Winnipeg, Raider talks about what needs to happen to prevent peat mines, like the one proposed for Hecla Grindstone Provincial Park, from becoming a reality.
Different government departments, like Wildlife Branch, that know that the peat mines that are proposed and have been licensed are a bad idea. They're going to have an impact that we don't need in Manitoba. There's people in wildlife who know that it's going to impact the moose, but they're not the people who get to make the final decision on whether or not to put a mine through, or get to make a final decision on how much it'll cost to buy the company out of their quarry leases as in an area that there shouldn't be a mine. So we are going to financially, in the next few years, be paying to put in place the type of ecological protection that's required in Manitoba. It's going to cost us to get these companies to get their mining claims and their quarry leases out of sensitive areas outside, out of our provincial parks.
For its part, the government of Manitoba seems to be on the side of Raider and the Wilderness Committee. An official statement sent to me by the province said that the government sees value in peat bogs, which is why it has placed a moratorium on new leases while it develops a first-in-Canada peat stewardship strategy. The government also talked about its record on protecting Manitoba habitat, creating 5 new parks in the past 12 months. Nevertheless, they declined to comment on the Hecla Grindstone mine and whether they intended to let it go forward.
That was Leif Larson's documentary, For Pete's Sake. You can hear more documentaries at Rabble Docs by going to rabble.ca/podcasts and clicking the link for Rabble Docs. Thank you for listening.